Sorrento, Kia's most awarded large SUV ever. Available now at your nearest Kia dealer.
This is Sports Day.
Yes, welcome into our new audience. Thrilled to have you along for the ride. If you want to jump on the phone and have you say, the Harcourt's open line is 1300 736 736. Or as always, you can send us a temper text 0433 98 11 16. Now, I was at an entertainment loose end on Saturday night and I was looking for something to watch whilst I waited for episode 6 of White Lotus to drop. And I stumbled across a brilliant documentary on YouTube titled The Art of the Choke. Now, at its core, the doco is a history lesson in sporting disappointments and heartbreak. The vast majority of sports competitors are doomed to retire as nothing more than forgotten losers, the narrator says. While that statement is depressing and cold, it's probably right. There is not enough winning to go around. Furthermore, the premise of the 51-minute sporting history lesson is some losers will not be forgotten so easily. Many athletes and sporting teams fail to cope under extreme pressure. They succumb to the burden of thousands watching in the grandstands and millions watching at home. The ability to block this out separates the great from the good. It only took a few hours from this documentary finishing for me to be reminded of that fact yet again when we all woke up on Sunday morning to watch our heroic Socceroo team strutting its stuff against the world's best on the biggest stage of all. The greatest, Messi, took a regulation free kick on the cusp of halftime. And before the thousands of Aussies who were jammed in like sardines at Fed Square could blink, the magician received an errant return pass from that free kick and calmly shot the ball between the spread eagle legs of Socceroos defender Harry Soutar and rolled the ball into the back of the net. 1-0, Argentina. Pressure? Messi? What pressure? Conversely though, Matt Ryan, the typically cool and calm Aussie goalkeeper, the man who was flawless in his last two group games, buckled on the same stage. It is harsh to single out Ryan, particularly as his attacking teammates Aziz Baich and 18-year-old sensation Grant Quall both had golden opportunities to equalise late in the match, but failed to finish. However, Ryan's error was unforgivable. There are many ways to lose in sports, the YouTube doco admits, some more spectacular than others. You can throw a game on purpose, get cheated out by awful umpiring, get destroyed by a far superior opposition, or if you truly want to be remembered for losing, look no further than the most painful way, the choke. Ryan choked, but he's not alone. No sport or individual is safe. How can you explain such finely tuned, brilliant athletes butchering the most regulation of skills? Miss 10-yard field goals with a 99% probability of hitting to send your team through to a Super Bowl? Missed. Set shots from 15 metres out directly in front at a crucial stage of an AFL Grand Final? Missed. Dean Wallace taking on Fraser Brown at centre-half forward in the 1999 AFL Prelim? Why? What was he thinking? Boston Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner fluffing a regulation ground ball in the 10th innings of the 1986 World Series to allow an easy game-deciding run? Unthinkable. And on the same World Cup stage in 1994, Italian wizard Roberto Baggio blasting a penalty over the crossbar. And now, Ryan, who absurdly decided to try and dance around two nimble Argentinian forwards like he was Messi, instead of sinking his boot into it as hard as he could to clear the area, was pickpocketed and coughed up the easiest of goals. 2-0, Argentina. And it may have just cost Australia its most famous ever football moment. Ryan is a brilliant character, and he was good enough to front the media post-match to admit his mistake and vow to learn from it. His teammates and coach promised to rally around him. That means little. Sports fans are always looking for a hero, and most of the time we'll be left disappointed. Jared, as I welcome you in for another hour, a costly error or a sporting choke?
Well, I guess it depends, Kane, and an interesting take. It depends on your definition of a choke. At the time, I thought it was just a mistake, and listening afterwards, I did note that they told us openly that their plan was not to kick the ball long. Their plan was to dribble it through the defence, and my gut feeling is I suspect he second-guessed himself. I think normally he would have just picked the ball up and taken the safety, but he was probably thinking to the instructions pre-match that I'm going to dribble it. May have taken his eye slightly off it, and it ricocheted a little bit further than he would have liked, and it was an unfortunate mistake, something that he will live with for a period of time. But whether or not you call it a choke, I'm not sure, because there didn't seem to be that much riding on it to me. It was just more of a... an error, if you like. It wasn't game time. It wasn't serving the second serve to stay in the set, for instance. It wasn't chipping from 4 feet to win the US Masters. But nevertheless, you can put it down as a choke if you like, because coming up we've got Anthony Clarica, who's sports psychologist and author of The Performance Mindset. He joins us on the line and he can give us the definitive answer. Welcome to you, Anthony.
Evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Pretty good. How do you see all that, the decision, and how would you classify it?
I think you've called it well. I think it was more of a technical error, and there's no doubt nobody hurting more than the athlete themselves in these instances. And on this occasion, it's no one hurting more than Matty Ryan. I thought it was great that he admitted his error and put it forward as a learning and growing opportunity too, to be honest.
There's no doubt about that. It's brutal to single out individuals, and it's tough to focus on moments, but that is the pressure of being a highly paid athlete on the world's biggest stage. Now, a sporting choke, I guess, is a dramatic drop in performance under pressure. I mean, that's how you would categorise a choke, or a person's ability to behave differently in a situation where they would usually and typically behave a separate way. Is it myth or is it fact that some athletes don't handle the pressure? And I guess you've studied this at length, Anthony.
Yeah, I've studied it and seen it, Kane, and you're spot on. A choke is as an occasion where a person who would typically perform something really well on the occasion, in reality, is what they trained for, doesn't actually execute.
So Matt Ryan would have done that. I haven't watched him closely enough, but those who have followed his career, I mean, you could count on one hand.
Where he wouldn't be there if he did it on a regular basis.
Yeah, so there's no other way to describe what happened as than a clear drop in performance and a behaviour of a way that he wouldn't usually under those different circumstances. And like in the group games where he was almost flawless.
Yeah, I think you'd have to consider something that Jared said as well with regards to the team plan, because one of the things that helps people perform really well is to have clarity, to be really clear on what they want to execute. And on this occasion, if there was a particular instruction to, not kick long and to, the goalkeeper to try to control the ball, then he's potentially doing something or trying to do something that he might not typically do instinctively. And I think some of the best athletes actually, under high-pressure situations, they do rely on instinct or what looks like instinct on other occasions, because in reality, performing under pressure, the people that do it really well have rehearsed that moment hundreds, if not thousands of times in their own mind.
It's a brutal game in many ways because one little mistake where he plays costs you a goal. The same probably happened 40 times through the midfield, and those mistakes were simply seen as mistakes because they don't result in a penalty, or not a penalty goal, but a goal against.
And I think the best goalkeepers actually want that. And if you don't want it or you're not prepared for that, then in reality on the world stage you probably shouldn't be a goalie. And the best athletes, they want the ball in their hand, or they want to be in these occasions, and they thrive. And, what we typically talk about is athletes that do perform under these occasions that Kane's talking about is they embrace, they wait for those opportunities, they prepare for the opportunities. And when they actually get there, they actually embrace that opportunity.
So if an athlete comes to you and they describe that they struggle in those moments, they might do something really well for 70% of the time. When the moment gets big on them, they do capitulate in whatever way. I mean, it's not easy to fix. What is your advice to those athletes?
But to be honest, it's probably not that uncommon because what we're asking them to do is to execute or perform in a very unforeign, unusual environment. Matty Ryan's played many huge matches for Australia, but it's the first time Australia's ever been in that scenario for him. And you might get to Wimbledon final, or it might be a grand final. So you actually have to prepare for something that's when you get there is unpredictable. The noise out in the middle of the MCG on a grand final day. So what you've got to do is you've got to make sure that people are using specific strategies that are most relevant for them well before the day. You can't wait to turn up on the day and think, oh, right, this is a big occasion. I'm going to try to do this today, Kane. And there's lots of different strategies depending on your character, You know, some people are a little bit more passive, introverted. Some are a bit more extroverted. And, you know, I was actually thinking about Cedric Dubler and Cathy Freeman, and two amazing sporting achievements with Cedric Dubler in the 1500 at the Tokyo Olympics, where he's exhausted, and he had Ash Maloney had to perform, and Cedric Dubler was yelling in his ear, and that got him across the line, but he was ready to embrace that. Whereas Cathy Freeman didn't want anyone yelling in her ear. She just really, at that amazing, famous 400 metres at the Sydney 2000 Olympics, she just wanted to settle and calm. And there's actually, I talk about in the book a little bit, the difference between clutch and flow. And she just wanted to get into a flow state. But she'd rehearsed that many times before. And you talk about other athletes who have a mantra. They use that in training. They imagine being under pressure. They put themselves under huge stress as best as possible. You can never really simulate the occasion. But they put themselves in that environment, in their own mind, in training, and they rehearse it. So when they get to the big occasion, they're as comfortable as they possibly can be in that environment.
Yeah, all right. So I guess it's an issue that will be with sports stars for years and years and years. You've written a book, The Performance Mindset, Seven Steps to Success in Sport and Life. Just quickly, what are the key takeouts from that?
The key takeouts really are that there's a whole range of variables that actually influence your performance. You can't take it as an isolated thing, Kane. You've got to consider your resilience, the whole journey to get there. Many athletes that actually end up achieving at the highest level, we just get to see the finished product. But I suppose people like myself get to see the development along the way, and you get to see how they actually work to prepare for those occasions that we're talking about with Matty Ryan. So I suppose resilience, your capacity to train and build your focus, manage your well-being, and a whole range of factors like that, and the skills and strategies you need to build those to contribute to the performance that we're actually talking about today.
Good on you, Anthony. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cheers. Thank you.
Anthony Clarica, sports psychologist and author of The Performance Mindset. This is our hot topic of the day for APCO, open 24/7 this festive season, including Christmas Day, Boxing Day and New Year's Day, if you don't mind. A lot of people wanted to have their say on the text or on the phones. Ryan's error is due to a lack of regular game time, which is crucial in football. Evening men, so Kano, you played 300 games, 151 wins, 2 draws, 147 losses. How do you rate your career? One premiership and an absolute flogging by 119 points. We're all open to criticism when we play elite sport. Declan is in Frankston. You want to have your say, Declan. Good evening and welcome to Sports Day.
Good evening, boys. Just two parts to what I wanted to say. Firstly, something that I was worried about heading into this World Cup was, what is our identity? What is our identity going on to the world stage? And I think we've actually created a really good base, something that reflects the Australian attitude and spirit. We're a tough team. I think the world took notice of how hardworking we are and organised. It's not a finished product at all. And that leads into my second part, is what you guys have been discussing on the show with the callers, is that there is just no pathway, the right pathway to create, showcase players, I like to call them. Players like Messi and players that can break a game open. We don't have the pathway to support those types of players. I don't think we've had one since Harry Kewell.
But we've had a Harry Kewell. So how did Harry get there and others don't?
Yes. Well, I mean, the landscape's changed dramatically.
What, for the worse? How has it got worse? Because we're not producing a Harry?
Yep. So, well, basically, getting rid of the NSL and those pathways,
yep,
and trying to revamp it with an A-League that really got stripped of any kind of identity from all the clubs that were already established, and no pathway for juniors to play. I mean, like we've talked about the fees, the exorbitant fees for juniors. That how can an immigrant that comes to this country be able to play and the game that they play back home, how can they come here and play in the NPL system and get that recognised?
I don't think that's a question asked just of immigrants. If it's $3,000 and you've got 3 or 4 kids, that's a big ask. I mean, it's staggering, Kane, that this is the case for the world game in this country, that it costs a family $3,000. Now, it doesn't matter whether you are whatever spot you have on the economic scale. That's a lot of money. And it just staggers me that, and this has been raised before and it's being raised again, but it still staggers me that it is the case. And if juniors are being asked to fund senior football, then that's out of kilter.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more because I, you know, reflect, I don't have children that play soccer, but they play basketball, and I reckon it's about $150 at the start of the year, then it's about $10 a game.
There's a requirement for insurance, and that's in the hundreds of dollars. It's not in the thousands of dollars. Now, if you're getting a free pair of boots and you're getting a jumper and all of that, well, that's a different story, but it's still way too much, and I'm staggered that more isn't done about it.
A lot of feedback on the Matt Ryan mistake as well. G'day, boys. Mark Allen said ages ago that golf was choking his spot on. We all know even the famous ones do. Even look at Adam Scott on the weekend. Double bogey on the 17th. Ray is in Sunbury. You want to speak about Matt Ryan's error? Ray, what do you think?
Well, I'd like to help him out a bit here because I think it was Rolls, the fullback. Now, he had an easy option to push the ball left, and I think it was Bates could have taken the ball and cleared it up the wing. But he chose to come back inside, which you don't, when you're under pressure like that, you don't come back and square back to the middle in a game of football. And he underhit that pass to Ryan while Argentina were performing the press. Now, yeah, Ryan should probably have first time he should have booted it. Yeah, I'll give you that. But Rolls underhit that pass, and he put Ryan under pressure initially. Now, I was just hoping that Rolls would have come out and held his hand up as well to give Matty Ryan a bit of a chop out. But I haven't heard anything about that. But I think Matty Ryan is getting a bit of a raw deal here. He did make a blue, yeah. But Rolls put him under the cosh for sure.
Why wouldn't he have just taken it in his hands? And that's why I go back to, I guess, the instructions.
Because he kicked it. Because it was his teammate.
Pass back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think there's some culpability on the teammate, as you describe. But 99 times out of 100, he just belts that 50 metres or out to the sideline and clears the area. He doesn't try and play like Messi and run around him. And that's why I called it a sporting choke, because it was an unusual action under extreme pressure. And he's not the first person or athlete to succumb to that. Saro, if I've pronounced your name correctly, is in Bundoora. You want to speak about the Socceroos. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Kane and Jared. How are you? First-time caller, long-time listener. The gentleman before me just clarified. I just wanted to mention that Matty could not pick up the ball from his teammate's pass back. So, that was the issue I was calling about. But in saying that, I think he was also surprised by the pressing of... I think he could only see the one opponent coming towards him, and he tried to sidestep him, and he didn't... I don't think he realised there was a player coming up behind him that snuck up on him and pinched the ball off him. And that's where he made the grave mistake.
Good on you, mate. We might take one more on this. Dave is in Richmond. Give us your thoughts on the pathways in soccer, Dave.
Oh, it's very difficult. It's got multiple sports going on, Kane. I love my Tigers, I know that. But I lived in the UK. They need to live and breathe it. And I think I played about level 10 in the pyramid over there. We haven't even got a pyramid here in Australia. And our best players are getting about £50 a week, about $100. And the fact that you've got all these ethnically oriented clubs and players getting $1,000 and the juniors are paying for it, these guys here wouldn't even get a look in over there in the UK or around Europe, their ability. But you've also got the state governments. They've got no commercial interest, or they've got huge commercial interest in the NRL and the AFL, same in South Australia and WA. It's of no interest to them that football, or soccer, what I'll call it, takes off and starts to interfere with those sort of contracts, is there?
I don't think that's an issue. I don't see how the state government would be considering the commerciality of it. I think if soccer actually boomed, that would be better for everybody.
Yeah, I don't understand why there's no pyramid system. I think geographically it's very difficult because it's such a huge country, and to have multiple tiers of
of leagues playing across the country is very difficult, and the costs associated with travelling is horrendous here.
Well, it's certainly more horrendous at the moment than it was pre-pandemic when you're paying three times what you were. But I think the commerciality of soccer is dependent, in essence, Kane, on, like most sports, on TV rights. And and that's dependent on eyeballs on the A-League and attendances at the A-League. Now, the A-League's been taken over by the clubs. I think that still stands. I'm not sure it's gone ahead because of that. It doesn't appear to have gained any further traction because of that. Some clubs are privately owned. It's certainly not at the level it was 10 years ago when Ernie Merrick was winning flags on a regular basis with the Victory. And there was great recognition of people within the club. So I think until the A-League and soccer itself can land a big TV rights deal, and unfortunately it's divided up between Channel 10 and SBS, that may change, I think, at the next World Cup. But until they can land a boom event, well, then the trickle-down doesn't appear to be getting to the juniors.
I think what Dave's saying is having lived in the UK and experiencing the culture, he agrees with you. Like, this is an achievement to be celebrated, not one to be negative about and to be complaining about. So I think at the heart they're agreeing. And this text sums it up as well. Gents, only Croatia, 3.9 million, and Netherlands, 17.7, have made a final with less than 40 million population since 1980, essentially the true professional era. And they also didn't win. He goes on to have some more stats, but essentially summing up the Aussies' performance. We did just touch on the fixture and the AFL's decision to release it. I've just got a quick thought on it, Jared. Why is it still so Victorian-centric? So I read the press release from the AFL and Travis Auld, and he says all Victorian-based clubs are going to play in Melbourne in round one. Well, another free kick. Travis Auld says, we're always aiming to get our season off to the best possible start, and with four big clubs, traditional rivalries, 150,000 plus at the MCG over the first two nights, and with millions more watching around the country, it gives the competition the best opportunity to kickstart the season. It's a big year ahead. Football will be palpable, not only in Melbourne, but around the country.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure why they decided that. It's the first time I've ever thought that has occurred. Is there a game in Adelaide?
Yeah, there is. So Port Adelaide play Brisbane. Yeah. So Brisbane get shafted. They make a prelim final. They get all these recruits in the off-season, a lot of excitement. They've got to travel to Adelaide for a time slot in the Saturday afternoon twilight, which is dead. GWS, Auld says they're going to bring Sydney to life. Well, how's GWS versus Adelaide at Giants Stadium going to bring that to life? Poor old Sydney. They make the grand final. They got Buddy Franklin in his last year. They play exciting footy. Guess where they're off to? Gold Coast. And you guessed it. Hawthorn, who won eight last year, they traded everyone and are essentially going to probably go backwards this year. They get to play Essendon, who haven't won a final in 18 years, at the MCG
must be some
in
method.
A marquee slot.
There must be some method in this,
because they're only focused on Melbourne.
No, that can't. The history of that suggests that that's rubbish. Well, they must have some sort of metrics, or there must be some inhibition for Brisbane to be able to not play in Brisbane because of cricket.
There's some issues in Perth with Ed Sheeran, like there's an Ed Sheeran tour which rules out.
But it hasn't happened before, so I don't think somebody's going to walk in and say, oh, this is because of Victorian bias. This will be driven, by, like most things, from a commerciality perspective, on top of some restriction potentially with ground availability.
They want it to look good on a press release that they've broken attendance records. That's the only thing.
Well, but that's a commercial. That's a commercial issue.
At the neglect of a national competition. So poor old West Coast go and play North Melbourne on a Sunday at Marvel in front of 13,000. And Sydney, who are off the back of a grand final, go and play at Metricon in front of 15,000. Well, that's in Perth, not in Sydney. But Sydney could have hosted a game. They got to go to Gold Coast. Anyway.
Yeah, they'll host one in round two.
Yeah, more free kicks to the Victorian teams. 1-300-736-736. And everyone else is shafted. We can have you say. You can have your say on that. We'll speak to the AFL later on this week when the full fixture is released. You're listening to Sports Day. It's getting fiery in here. Plenty more after this.